hopefully with the deployment of the substantive mission, we can start to make progress on the ground.
New hopes for an end to violence in Yemen. It's Friday, January 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, China sentences an American national to death. Are smartphones becoming too smart? And keeping the world's chocolate where it's made? It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. A court in Dalian, China, acting with alarming speed and haste, this week retried and resentenced Canadian national Robert Schellenberg on charges of drug trafficking. The court, which had previously sentenced Mr. Schellenberg to 15 years in prison, moved within a matter of hours to rehear his case and up his sentence to death. In fact, it took less than an hour for the court to rule that Schellenberg should be executed. Human rights and civic rights activists, as well as judicial observers, are denouncing the decision as politically mandated. This given China's standoff with Canada over Ottawa's detention of Meng Wanzhou, the chief financial officer of Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Sophie Richardson is the China director for Human Rights Watch.
I think the circumstances of retrying Robert Schellenberg can't be divorced from the larger brouhaha, or I should say fit of diplomatic pique that China is expressing towards Canada. There was no indication that Mr. Schellenberg's case would have gone to retrial absent some extra effort to go out and find a case against a Canadian that could be subjected to further procedures with a harsher penalty. And so when the court in Dalian decided to retry him, I think there was rightly a lot of skepticism in the wake of the detention in Canada of a Huawei executive that this was not just political payback as opposed to fixing legal errors or oversights.
To what degree do you think the courts in China are politically motivated or controlled?
100%. I mean, it is explicitly stated that the purpose of the judicial system in China is to serve the interests of the party, not to act independently of it. And, you know, courts at almost all levels have party committees that weigh in on decisions about what are considered sensitive issues. Now, I don't want to give the wrong impression and suggest that every single court case in China carries political interference. You know, lower level cases or garden variety crimes against ordinary Chinese citizens do proceed with a modicum of normal procedures and party interests don't weigh in. But if you looked out at the scope of people for example, senior officials who do get tried and on what charges and when, you can really see how politicized the system is.
Sophie Richardson, even given that, this seems to be an unusual escalation in an affair that has been seen as between Beijing and Ottawa, and now seems to be involving Washington.
Well, yeah, it's hard to see that this is just an ordinary legal case divorced from or somehow coincidental to this diplomatic tussle. And I think it's a classic example of how, you know, not only China will use its legal system in whatever way is politically convenient, but I think it's also sending a really terrifying message to the rest of the world to show how crass and cruel the Chinese government can be, that it would, you know, would subject this person to retrial and sentence him to death. You know, in response for being angry about the detention of a Chinese executive.
Finally, what legal recourse do you think lies before Mr. Schellenberg?
Well, he can appeal, and it's our understanding that he plans to do that. And death penalty sentences in China are all meant to be reviewed by superior courts. And it's, you know, there aren't many formal appeals beyond that. Obviously, Prime Minister Trudeau has already called for clemency in this case. But it's a very distressing example of the multiple kinds of denials of fair trial rights being held for a year before being charged, being denied access to the lawyer of your choice, not knowing all the evidence against you, you know, and then an abrupt retrial that was awfully quick. Some of the threats that people across China, foreigners and Chinese citizens themselves all face every day.
I'll let you go, but I just have to say, just as an observer looking at this, and I apologize for the adjective, but this all seems a little bit sordid.
Yeah, sordid isn't the adjective that comes leaping to mind for me, especially because I'm not particularly acquainted with all of the facts of the case or the evidence that's presented against him. We're certainly wearily familiar with all of the fair trial rights violations mm-hmm. that he has endured, you know, and which we document again and again and again against ordinary citizens in China and against human rights defenders. But I think China is doing itself extraordinary reputational harm by choosing to respond to the Huawei case in this way.
Sophie Richardson, thank you for the time.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Sophie Richardson is the China Director for Human Rights Watch. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. North Korea's top envoy involved in talks with the United States arrived in Beijing Thursday and is thought to be en route to Washington. An Indian court sentenced a popular spiritual guru and three of his followers to life in prison in the murder 16 years ago of a journalist. A volcano erupted on a remote island in southern Japan Thursday, but the warning level was kept below the scale requiring evacuation. And the fledgling U.S.-initiated dialogue with the Taliban has come to a halt, an insurgent spokesperson said on Monday. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. Well, if it's another Friday, it's another week of the U.S. government shutdown. While the story may have become tedious for some, it's exponentially affecting U.S. workers, the economy, and, oh yes, the government as well. VOA's Steve Herman has this update, which may sound like just about every other recent update on this serious issue.
In recent days, Democrats have ignored U.S. President Donald Trump's invitations to speak with him about ending the record government closure. But on Wednesday, seven Democrats from the House, members of the Problem Solvers Caucus, joined Republicans in the White House Situation Room. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders calls the meeting constructive and says the administration looks forward to more discussions. Trump wants billions of dollars authorized by lawmakers to build a border wall along the southern border with Mexico, calling it a national security priority. Democrats dispute that assertion and say they will not negotiate about the wall until the president first agrees to reopen the government. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Turning now to another ongoing conflict, this one taking hundreds of lives in Yemen. The UN Security Council has unanimously authorized the deployment of up to 75 monitors to Yemen's port city of Hodeida as part of an international effort to maintain a critical ceasefire. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
The UN mission to support the Hodeida Agreement will initially work for 6 months. The monitors will join a small advance team headed by Dutch Major General Patrick Kamert, which deployed to the city late last month. British Ambassador Karen Pierce, whose delegation drafted the resolution, said the mission is important to the success and implementation of agreements the parties made in Stockholm last month.
Hopefully, with the deployment of the substantive mission, we can start to make progress on the ground.
The resolution authorizes the monitors to deploy quickly and oversee the ceasefire not just in Hodeida City, but throughout the governorate, as well as verifying the parties' compliance to redeploy their forces. Last month, delegations representing the government of President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi and Houthi rebels met under UN auspices near Stockholm for a first round of talks aimed at ending the nearly four-year-long conflict. Parties agreed to the localized truce in Hodeidah, as well as redeployment of fighters to agreed locations outside the city. The localized ceasefire is an important first step to restoring peace across the war-torn country. The country is in an economic freefall, and more than 24 million people, 80% of the population, are in need of humanitarian assistance. A Saudi-led coalition began bombing Iranian-aligned Houthi rebels in support of Yemen's government in March 2015. Since then, the UN estimates more than 10,000 people have been killed, mostly due to coalition airstrikes. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And you're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, Asia-Pacific shares traded mixed on Thursday, despite strong quarterly earnings in the U.S. Japan's Nikkei closed down 40.48 points, while the TOPIX index added 5.43 points. Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell about 0.5%. in late afternoon trading. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. At least four Americans were killed in a suicide blast in the northern Syrian city of Manbij Wednesday, doubling the number of American troops killed in action in Syria since the U.S. first entered in 2014. The attack also claimed the lives of a civilian and a contractor working for the Department of Defense and more than a dozen others. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Surveillance footage shows the moment of attack, the blast ripping through a restaurant in the city center. Islamic State claimed responsibility. The target? American troops and local Syrian fighters who were meeting there while on a routine patrol, according to the Counter-Islamic State Coalition. VOA video shows troops evacuating a wounded American from a stadium nearby. The attack was the deadliest ever against U.S. forces fighting Islamic State in Syria. The Pentagon sent condolences to the victims' families, adding the U.S. would remain steadfast.
Our fight against terrorism is ongoing, and we will remain vigilant and committed to its destruction.
On Wednesday, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence failed to mention the attack and said the U.S. has started to hand off the fight to its allies in Syria.
We are bringing our troops home. The caliphate has crumbled and ISIS has been defeated.
Critics have said the administration's conflicting signals have weakened the U.S. counterterror position, with presidential ally Senator Lindsey Graham warning President Donald Trump that his recent Syria statements have energized terrorists while leaving allies on the ground uncertain of the U.S. commitment.
I would hope the president would look long and hard of where he's headed in Syria. I know people are frustrated, but we're never going to be safe here unless we're willing to help people over there who will stand up against this radical ideology.
The latest attack could make the U.S. military's controversial withdrawal from Syria even more uncertain. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This news alert from VOA Asia. One in three Christians in Asia faces high levels of persecution, according to a new report from a watchdog group. Around half of China's 100 million Christians encounter persecution, quote, the worst it's been in more than a decade, the Open Doors group said. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. On this week's Plugged In, VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren takes viewers inside this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas for a look at the latest electronic devices and technology. Many promise to make our homes and our lives more efficient and more fun. But do these products really do what they claim? And what risks do they pose to your family's privacy and security? VOA's Elizabeth Chernoff has more.
From the free-falling to the futuristic.
It can be tablet size and fold into a cell phone size.
Smart technology and how it can make life easier was the theme at this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. But experts say as technology advances, so do the potential problems.
Technology has really kind of hit a stumbling block between consumer concerns about privacy and just the fact that, you know, the innovation out there isn't what it used to be. There are definitely a lot of concerns, a lot of drags on this CES.
Across sectors, more companies are utilizing technologies like drones and robots to meet user demands.
A lot of these companies, what they're really solving for today is time to market and convenience. In other words, what's the technology you want to build, and how can I get that in the hands of consumers as soon as possible?
Sensors and cameras and smart devices can make life more convenient, but they also record more details of people's lives.
Cameras are everywhere today, and their number increases regularly every single day. It is literally a public space. Think about it, if you're sharing a vehicle, it is more of a public space, similar to when you walk into a bank or a movie theater.
Protecting personal information is an inherent risk users face as their devices become more connected.
People quite like to think of their homes as being spaces that they can control. And until we really have clarity around what happens to information, when information passes from the device to a cloud, and whether that's with a notification that says, okay, let me check that online for you, and then the search is made. We have no real way of knowing unless we unplug something.
In an increasingly digital age, concerns about safeguarding data aren't disappearing anytime soon. Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Air quality has worsened to dangerous levels in several Asian countries in recent days, becoming so unhealthy in Thailand that leaders have handed out face masks and are likely to turn to cloud seeding in hopes that rain will clear the air. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, healthy forests are key to a healthy planet, but climate change is putting forests under stress. A new system aims to track the tree's vital signs. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
The world's forests perform a critical role, soaking up planet-warming carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But there's only so much they can do, says Antonio Brunori, head of the Sustainable Forestry Authority, PEFC Italy.
We are therefore in a historic moment for climate change because the scientific world is on alert, and it says, be careful. The ecosystem of the forests is not able anymore, as it was before, to absorb all this carbon dioxide. It has reached a point of saturation.
Forests are under increasing stress as temperatures rise. Trees are more vulnerable to pests and diseases, for example. That's bad for the climate. It's also bad for the timber industry. Forest managers need an early warning system. That's where these instruments come in. They're called tree talkers.
Tree talker is a detector, or better, a series of detectors, which transforms eco-physiological signals, such as growth, absorption of carbon dioxide, liquid flow from roots to leaves, into scientific information.
Dalle radici alle foglie, in informazioni scientifiche.
That information could reveal when a tree is under attack from insects or fungi. The tree talker sends that information to faraway forest managers, says its inventor, Riccardo Valentini, head of the Euro-Mediterranean Center on Climate Change.
The TikTok device transmits data via radio, and it can transmit data up, actually very long distance, up to 1 kilometer. These data transmitted via radio are transmitted to the internet, to cloud, using what is available. If it's in the middle of the forest without Wi-Fi, it can transmit through a SIM card.
The data lets forest managers take action right away to control the threat. The device also tracks the width of the tree's trunk, so managers can keep track of how much wood they're growing compared to how much they're cutting down and keep their harvests sustainable. And the data will give scientists a better understanding of exactly how climate change is affecting forests and the role they play in a healthy environment.
From water to carbon sequestration from the atmosphere, from habitats, from wildlife and biodiversity. So forests are important. Forests are made by trees. So we need to study the individuals to understand the forest.
About 300 tree talkers are being tested in Italy, China, Russia, and elsewhere. This year, Valentini expects another 1,700 devices to be tested internationally. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says they are getting closer to resuming science operations with the Hubble Space Telescope's Wide Field Camera 3 after restoring it to its operations mode. As a safety precaution, the Hubble camera suspended operation after a hardware problem was detected on January 8th. The space agency says that their technicians are now calibrating the instrument and putting it through a number of tests. If the tests are successful, NASA says the camera could be back at work collecting celestial images within days. The Wide Field Camera 3 was installed on the Hubble by crew members of the Space Shuttle Atlantis in 2009. It replaced two original Hubble wide-field cameras and was touted to be the most technologically advanced instrument to take images that can be seen with the human eye. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Finally today, Ghana produces about 900,000 tons of coca every year. This makes it the world's second biggest exporter of the coca bean, second only to Ivory Coast. Until recently, most of that coca went straight out of Ghana. But today, local farmers want to keep it at home. VOA's Arash Arabisadi reports.
Chances are good that if you've ever had cocoa or chocolate, it came from one of the 900,000 or so cocoa farming families in Ghana. Farmers like Nicholas Narwarti say that instead of exporting their cocoa, farmers should be making their own chocolates.
We should be adding value locally to the coca. If demand increased locally, that would only help us. It would be better to produce the chocolate locally rather than exporting the beans.
Ghana is the world's second biggest cocoa exporter. But for farmers sending the raw cocoa overseas, the fruits of their labor are not as lucrative as making and selling their own chocolate.
The confectionery business has started on a humble note of approximately 2 to 5% of our output to start with, but we believe that the confectionery business or the confectionery section is the way to go. Basically, talking about value addition. So we know that is going to grow.
Niche is Ghana's leading chocolate exporter, distributing about 60 tons of semi-processed beans each year. The company started making its own chocolates in 2017. They now make 200 tons of finished chocolate goods each year, and that number is on the rise thanks in part to government help.
Any import you bring in, that's machinery, equipment, whatever, you don't pay any tax on them. No import tax on them. Number two, you have 10 years moratorium for corporate tax.
But that really only helps large companies able to purchase machinery. The majority of Ghana's artisanal chocolate producers get zero government support and often operate in parts of the country without reliable electricity, which may for now leave small farmers still looking to export their crop outside of Ghana. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
I'll end the week with chocolate every time. Well, that is VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll see you again next week.